Today, is the bottom in? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is posts covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, in this week's market update, which is overshadowed, of course, by the action in Ukraine, we consider whether the markets are looking past Russia's intervention. The spike in volatility through the week triggered wild swings in global shares, commodity prices, and safe haven assets, including government bonds and gold, as investors recalibrated their positioning. Certainly, US stocks jumped for a second day on Friday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average up more than 2% in afternoon trading, and oil prices fell back below $100 a barrel, easing some concerns about higher energy costs. Russian missiles pounded Kyiv, and families cowered in shelters on Friday, a day after Russia unleashed a three-pronged invasion of Ukraine in the biggest attack on a European state since World War II. And investors also are assessing news that Russian President Vladimir Putin told his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in a call that Russia was willing to hold high-level talks with Ukraine, according to China's foreign ministry. Some strategists say stock selling may have been overdone. The S&P 500 confirmed earlier this week that it was in correction mode when it ended down more than 10% from its 3rd of January record closing high. It sure feels a lot more like we've really exhausted sentiment in this correction, said Jim Paulson, chief investment strategist at the Leadhold Group in Minneapolis, noting that economic fundamentals and corporate health does remain favourable. In fact, all 11 of the S&P 500 sectors were higher. Briefly, Russia's war in Ukraine caused traders to pull back on bets that the Federal Reserve will aggressively hike interest rates next month. The Federal Reserve, though, reiterated its view on Friday that it will soon be time to raise interest rates. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester said that barring an unexpected turn in the economy, I believe it will be appropriate to move the Fed's rate up in March and follow with further increases in the coming months. Markets still see around 6-quarter-point increases by the Fed, but bets on other central banks' hiking cycles have been pared back in recent days. While global stocks are staging a powerful bounce, the rebound is actually small compared with the day-after-day declines that came in the weeks before the invasion. It's coming in a market where fund managers cut positions furiously in January and February and loaded up on options market insurance and ploughed into short sales, precautions that may be feeding the turnaround. Treasuries, the dollar, and gold all retreated, signalling flagging demand for havens. And meanwhile, crude oil in New York fell to around $91 a barrel. What we're experiencing right now is a relief rally that basically caused many short sellers to cover their shorts. But I don't think the volatility has concluded, said Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist at CFRA Research. At least in the near term, Wall Street is saying it's time to go back to stocks instead of being in cash or possibly being in treasuries. A prolonged conflict could deliver a major blow to global markets and slow the normalization of central bank policy that's expected this year. Yet on the other hand, disruptions of raw materials and food could also stoke already high prices and heap pressure on central banks to act faster to curb inflation. Investors brace for higher commodity prices and further inflationary pressures following Russia's push into Ukraine as traders scramble to decode the military offensive and a raft of sanctions from Western powers. One example is the futures price for natural gas, which spiked on the moves into Ukraine. In fact, 40% of Russian gas goes into Europe, and Germany takes 65% of its gas from Russia. So this is a very significant issue. One reason why sanctions are so difficult, of course, sanctions imposed by Western powers so far have avoided gas exports, given their strategic importance to Europe, especially Germany, although Germany decided it would cancel the certification of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, which circumvents Ukraine. Natural gas futures prices gained 2% but remained far from the record levels achieved back in October when supply fears were at their peak. This conflict implies a further deterioration in the already tricky growth-inflation trade-offs central banks have been facing, making the upcoming decisions particularly hard. Silvia Delangelo, senior economist at the International Business Federation Hermes, wrote in the recent note, "Downside growth risks from the geopolitical backdrop means that they are likely to proceed gradually and cautiously." In contrast, Chris Zaccarelli, chief investment officer for Independent Advisor Alliance, said the idea that risk assets should rally because the Fed was less likely to raise rates seemed like a head fake. The market is being incredibly sanguine about the impact of the war in Ukraine, completely missing the reason the Fed is raising rates and why they can't slow down their pace of tightening, he said. With inflation likely to be exacerbated by disruptions due to the war, the Fed needs to do the opposite of what they would normally do, and that's to fight an even bigger threat of inflation. US consumer spending advanced by more than expected last month despite inflation and the Omicron variant. Yet, consumer sentiment was still down sharply from January, according to a University of Michigan index. Although consumer sentiment posted a slight increase in the last half of February, they said, it still remained at its lowest level in the past decade, and the loss was still entirely due to a 12.9% decline among households with incomes of $100,000 or more. The February descent resulted from inflationary declines in personal finances, a near-universal awareness of rising interest rates, falling confidence in the government's economic policies, and the most negative long-term prospects for the economy in the past decade. Solid economic growth confirms that the Fed does or can move forward with high interest rates, said CFRA Stabell. Inflation says it needs to, and high economic activity says it has the ability to. Energy prices compounded steady gains over the past year on the back of supply constraints in Europe and parts of Asia, which have squeezed oil, gas and coal higher. Brent crude, the international oil benchmark, shot above $100 a barrel on Thursday for the first time since 2014, when Russian-backed forces annexed Crimea. And some analysts are predicting a short-term jump up to $130 a barrel. The combination of tight inventory and low spare production capacity across the commodities complex means small disruptions could have outsized impacts on prices in the near term, Goldman Sachs analysts warned. Commodity price risk remains skewed to the upside from already elevated levels, particularly for European natural gas, wheat, corn, and oil prices higher from already elevated levels, they said. And the broker warned that positive signals from talks between the US and Iran, which is under sanctions for oil exports, would only incrementally bolster oil production levels should they succeed. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 2.43% on Friday to 34,032, while the S&P 500 gained 2.1% to 4,378, and the NASDAQ Composite added 1.29% to 13,646. Sentiment on the broader market was also underpinned by mostly upbeat quarterly results. Block reported fourth quarter results that beat on the top and bottom lines and delivered better than expected guidance, sending its shares more than 25% higher. Beyond Meat fell more than 9% after reporting a wider than expected loss as revenue came in below Wall Street estimates as management ramped up investment spending in an environment of slowing growth in retail, leading to significant losses, Oppenheimer said. We expect a meaningful reset of street numbers and view a path to profitability for Beyond Meat even more challenging going forward. ST, meanwhile, reported better than expected fourth quarter earnings and revenue, sending its shares more than 14% higher. Speculators cut their net long US dollar positions. According to calculations by Reuters and US Commodity Futures Trading Commission data released on Friday, the value of net long dollar was $5.8 billion in the week ended February the 22nd, compared with a net long of $6.76 billion the previous week. The Reuters calculation for the aggregate US dollar position is derived from net positions in the yen, euro, British pound, Swiss franc, Canadian and Australian dollars. In a wider measure of dollar positions that includes net contracts on the New Zealand dollar, Mexican peso, Brazilian real and Russian ruble, the US dollar posted a net long of $5.06 billion. That's the lowest since August 2020, compared with a net long of $6.17 billion just a week earlier. It's hard to declare with too much certainty that the market has hit a bottom, but I do think the weaker sanctions supported the market reversal yesterday, Mark Heppenstall, Chief Investment Officer at Penn Mutual Asset Management, said on Friday. US President Joe Biden outlined fresh sanctions on Thursday aimed at crippling Russia's economy and curbing its access to key technology used to advance its military and industrial capabilities. Biden has also reportedly planning to impose sanctions on Russian President Vladimir Putin, according to Bloomberg. With Russia and Ukraine both major grain exporters, investors are weighing the potential impact of the invasion. These include possible inflation and the impact of Western sanctions. With almost $200 billion in stock market value and roughly a third of the sovereign debt's value wiped out in Russia, the Central Bank of the Russian Federation, the Bank of Russia, took emergency action. Biden's announcement leaves markets looking at some additional sanctions being added, but certainly not as bad as it possibly could have been, said State Street Corp macro strategist Emily Weiss. That contributed to the Wall Street risk rally, she added. This is the most important point by far. The rally into strongly positive territory only started once President Biden had given his midday press conference on Thursday. In that briefing, he talked tough, as he had to, but listeners noted what he didn't say. In a response to a question, Biden said that Russia wouldn't be barred from the SWIFT international financial system because it was not a position the rest of Europe wanted to take. Closer inspection of the materials after the conference showed that the US is indeed going to be excluding Russia's biggest banks from the system in a way that almost matches what could happen to them if barred from SWIFT, but it also includes vital carve-outs for exports of oil and agricultural products, which happens to be the goods that Russia most needs to sell and Europe most needs to buy. Although expectations of central bank interest rate hikes have slightly decreased, the Fed is still widely expected to implement around six hikes. And across the Atlantic, the European Central Bank said the repercussions of the Russian invasion of Ukraine could delay but not stop asset tapering in 2022. How is the Fed going to react to this geopolitical risk? Optimal Capital Advisors Director of Strategy Francis Stacey told Bloomberg, that's where we're seeing spikes, where we start to try and reprice speculation around that. There had been some pressure on the president to roll out even tougher measures, including cutting Russia off from the global payment system and implementing measures to hamper the Russian oil and gas industry, which accounts for the bulk of the latter's growth. The as-yet absence of sanctions on Russian commodities could see energy markets give up gains triggered by the initial invasion, ANZ Research said in the note on Thursday. What happens in Ukraine does give the Fed a little more cover to be patient on monetary policy tightening, but a 25 basis point hike in March and 25 basis point hike in June are the base case scenarios, Happenstall said. I see the Fed funds rate at 1 to 1.25%. I would say 4 to 5 rate hikes sound reasonable to me. Now, gold messed around with the $1,900 peak, and it may not be over, but for this week itself, that high water mark seems to have hit a crescendo, with risk appetite overcoming safe haven trades on Friday to send US stocks and bond yields higher and gold down for the first time in 3 days, and for its first weekly decline in 4. Traders also seem to have grown somewhat wary in chasing bullion prices up on every Russian-Ukraine headline, explaining some of the deflation in the geopolitical pressure that sent gold to 30-month highs in the past two sessions. Gold prices are back below the $1,900 level as risk appetite continues to stage a comeback despite a tremendous amount of uncertainty with the war in Ukraine, said Ed Moyer, analyst at Onia. This week was quite the roller coaster ride for gold prices, and while it appears poised to finish the week slightly lower, the need for safe havens still remains. Gold's most actively traded contract on New York COMEX, the April contract, settled down 38.70 to 1,887. And on Thursday, the benchmark gold futures surged to a January 21 high of $1,976. Aside from the drop on the day, the front month in COMEX gold also declined 0.6% in the week for its first weekly slide since January 21st, when it settled at 1,784. Friday's pivot in gold came as the yield on the 10-year Treasury note hit a six-week high, just above 2%, and the slide also follows a historic plunge of nearly $100 intraday on Thursday in a market that seemed to have everything bullish going for it. US inflation at 40-year highs, a Russia-West showdown unlikely to end anytime soon, and continued weakness in stocks that could divert more funds towards havens like gold. The very fact that amidst one of the worst geopolitical military crises, gold witnessed a $98 historic fall raises questions on where gold is headed actually, said Sunil Kumar Dixit, commodities strategist at SK Charting. Goldman Sachs said on Thursday that the rally in gold could get to a new record high of $2,350, aided by demand for ETFs on the back of the situation in Ukraine. But then they've always been bullish on gold, haven't they? European stock markets traded higher on Friday, bouncing from the previous session's hefty losses as investors digested the potential long-term impact of the new Western sanctions on Russia, as well as German growth data and more corporate earnings. The DAX in Germany closed up 3.7% to 14,567, while the CAC 40 in France climbed 3.55% to 6,752. And the UK's FTSE rose 3.91% to 7,489. Helping Friday's positive tone was the release of the latest reading of German growth data. This showed the Eurozone's largest economy shrank less than initially reported at the end of last year, as output declined 0.3% in the fourth quarter, compared with a preliminary reading of minus 0.7%. In the corporate sector, travel stocks rebounded after Thursday's strong sell-off, with British Airways owner IAG stock up 2.2% as the group expects to return to profit this year. CEO Lewis Gallego confirmed the airline is now avoiding Russian airspace and has cancelled its flights to Moscow. German chemicals giant BASF was down 4.1%, after it forecast a decline in 2022 operating earnings as its supply chain remains vulnerable to disruptions. And Swiss Re stock slumped 5.7% after the reinsurer reported a smaller-than-expected full-year profit in 2021, suffering from big claims from natural disasters, while Valeo stock fell 4% after the French car parts maker warned its business continued to be impacted by chip shortages. And Pearson stock soared over 8% after the education group said it would launch a £350 million share buyback after hitting 2021 targets. And Holcim stock rose 2.1% after the world's biggest cement maker reported better than expected fourth quarter operating profit, expecting growth momentum to continue in all regions this year. Oil prices climbed on Friday with the new sanctions on Russia, levied by the US and Western allies after its invasion of Ukraine, raising fears that global energy supplies will be disrupted. Although a US official was quoted as saying its measures are not targeting and will not target oil and gas flows, the sanctions on Russia's banks and state-owned enterprises are likely to impede the country's ability to do business in the major currencies. The WTI was down 0.95% to 91.93. Asia-Pacific stocks were up on Friday, with Japan's Nikkei 225 up 1.95% 26,476, and data released earlier in the day show that the Tokyo Core Consumer Price Index grew 0.5% year-on-year in February. After decades of deflation, Japan is experiencing inflationary pressures, although nothing on the scale that we're seeing in the US or the UK. Inflation remains below the Bank of Japan's target of around 2%, but if the upswing continues, it could lead to a more hawkish stance from the Bank of Japan. Tokyo CPI for February jumped 1% year over year, up from 0.6% in January. That was the fastest annual pace since December 2019. The primary drivers of Japan's inflation are increases in prices of food and fuel. And then in the week, Bank of Japan core CPI, the central bank's preferred inflation gauge, rose 0.8%, which was lower than the 0.9% gained beforehand. South Korea's KOSPI rose 1.06% to 2,676, and Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was down 0.59% to 22,767 as COVID restrictions were expanded. China's Shanghai Composite rose 0.63% to 3,451. And China's powerful state planner has ordered the country's major ports to prevent the excessive hoarding of iron ore in a move aimed at significantly cutting stockpiles in Beijing's latest bid to cool iron ore prices. The National Development and Reform Commission met with port operators this week and urged them to increase the turnover of stockpiled iron ore in its latest push to tackle price speculation and hoarding. The meeting studied measures including greatly shortening the free storage period for iron ore for traders, increasing the cost of port hoarding, and preventing excessive hoarding, the NDR said in a translated copy of a statement posted on social media on Wednesday. The NDRC also asked port operators not to stockpile iron ore with the aim of driving up prices. Iron ore prices retreated on Wednesday following 2 days of gains due to investor concern about Chinese government intervention. The NDRC statement followed its meeting with the market regulator to introduce measures that would shorten the free storage period for iron ore, and it came as Bloomberg reported China was looking to set up a single state-backed platform for purchasing iron ore, which would give it greater control over prices. Analysts in China said the current iron ore port inventory was 160 million tonnes and that the latest move by the NDRC could see this reduced to 120 million to 130 million tonnes. The state planner has made 6 statements since late January aiming at curbing price speculation. And there was a sell-off in iron ore last week after the state planner and the market regulator told some iron ore traders to release excess inventory and reduce stocks to reasonable levels following a joint investigation in Quanzhou, one of the country's largest iron ore ports. The NDRC on Wednesday reiterated its push to tackle speculation. The National Development and Reform Commission and the State Administration of Market Supervision pays close attention to changes in iron ore prices and will work with relevant departments to further strengthen market supervision, resolutely and severely punish violations of laws and regulations such as fabricating and spreading information on price increases, hoarding and driving up prices, it said in the statement. Rio Tinto this week reported a $21.4 billion underlying profit, the second biggest in Australian corporate history behind BHP's 2011 result, partly on the back of record iron ore prices. While regulators in China are determined to crack down on price speculation, Beijing is driving up demand for the steelmaking commodity by backing another construction and infrastructure spending boom in a bid to stimulate the slowing economy. China said last year it wanted to boost domestic iron ore production by 30%, significantly ramp up investments in overseas mines, and strengthen scrap steel recycling under a plan designed to break Beijing's dependency on Australia. However, those signals have done nothing to dampen China's short-term enthusiasm for iron ore. A slowdown in China's GDP growth to 4% in the fourth quarter has alarmed Beijing, which is again shelving concerns about debt, to focus on growth. The Chinese government will announce its official annual growth forecast when Communist Party leaders meet in Beijing in 2 weeks' time for the National People's Congress. And so to Australia. Australian blue chips traded higher on Friday, following the day earlier sharp drop on a session marked by a large gain for Block, the payments company that acquired Afterpay last month. The ASX 200 gained 7.2 points to 6,997, with a gain of 0.1%, while the broader S&P All Ordinaries gained 20 points, or 0.3%, to 7,273. The action was led by the technology sector, which advanced 8.1%, its best one-day gain since 2007, as shares in Block soared 32.5% higher to $153.75 after encouraging December quarterly results released before markets opened. The San Francisco-based company said quarterly revenue surpassed $4 billion for the first time. That's 29% higher than the year earlier period and outpacing analysts' forecasts. The advance for local shares included a big jump for shares that had traded lower in the prior session, notably Life 360. The technology company, also based in San Francisco, jumped 22% to $5.71 after falling nearly 30% in the day earlier session, after investors responded negatively to half-year earnings. Other notable moves included Harvey Norman shares, which traded 3.2% higher at $5.15, after its half-year results showed sales fell less than investors anticipated during the period. The day's worst performer was Blackmores, which fell 10.5% to $75.31, compounding a sharp drop on Thursday when the company released its half-year results. The downward pressure has pushed the company's share price to the lowest level since August, and Blackmores is hoping a new product push will improve its fortunes after sales in China have slowed. And shares of Magellan Financial, the embattled fund manager, also fell sharply on Friday. The share price dropped 10.1% to $70.78 after the company revealed a further decline in its funds under management. Total assets managed by the company fell $10 billion in the 2 weeks since its most recent update, as investors scrambled to depart the fund manager's portfolios following changes to senior management. The decline for Magellan weighed on the financial sector, the day's worst performer, which eased 1% lower. And it's been quite the turnaround in the markets over the last 24 hours, as traders quickly morphed from panic about Russia invading Ukraine to seemingly being more hopeful and buying the dips. The recovery has been nothing short of remarkable, especially when you consider what is still happening in Ukraine. But if you look at Bitcoin, looks as though risk appetite has returned in a big way, and the outlook for the crypto perhaps is looking a bit more positive. The fact that it failed to break the January low during yesterday's panic sell-off is the first thing that really jumps out. The level was well defended and potentially signals that a low has formed, at least for now. The strength of the rebound is the next thing that is promising for Bitcoin. It's already tested 40,000 US less than a day before many feared that $30,000 could be a break. If 40,000 is broken, then 45,500 actually looks pretty vulnerable. And a break to that will be a strong signal that there may be good times ahead for Bitcoin. We'll see. It's been a rough start for the year, of course, with many events still unfolding and sentiment could quickly turn negative once more. But we are seeing some momentum building, and as long as we don't see another major cause of risk aversion, we could see Bitcoin building on its momentum in the coming weeks. Of course, one other risk is the inflation outlook, and recent moves in oil and gas could compound that. But the lows keep getting defended, and that could be an encouraging sign. And this market action, along with other factors, signals that the markets may have bottomed, according to Fundstrat's Tom Lee. Lee said in the note to clients that the S&P 500 has typically sold off in the lead-up to a geopolitical escalation before rallying on the day of an invasion. The firm looked at market moves during the Vietnam War and the Gulf War, among other geopolitical events. During each of those periods, stocks bottomed just before an invasion, Lee said. The strategist also highlighted a reversal in the volatility index as a sign that the markets may have found a trough. The VIX, the fear gauge, hit a high above 37 on Thursday before retreating to around 30. On Friday, the VIX traded down to 27. It looks like the VIX may have signaled an upside capitulation yesterday. That is, the seeking of protection got to a level yesterday that could be a sign of exhaustion, he said. To be sure, Instanet's Frank Caparelli isn't ready to call the bottom yet, though. Coming off the SPX's second 4% low-to-close positive reversal, exactly 1 month removed from the last one, traders will be looking for some upside follow-through once again, he wrote in the note. And Caparelli also said Thursday's reversal was the 14th time since 2011 that the S&P 500 had seen such an intraday swing. However, those reversals have only marked a major trading low in 5 of the previous 13 times. That said, there may be some buying opportunities for investors at these levels. CFRA's Sam Stavell said Goldman Sachs and BlackRock are currently trading at a discount to the broader market. And meanwhile, Evercore said Ralph Lauren, UPS and Paulette Group are companies with strong pricing power and improving earnings. But the bottom line is this. There could well be more wild swings like the ones we've seen on Thursday. And it could well be a while before we actually know where the bottom is. So continued caution to me sounds like the right set of marching orders, if I can use that phrase. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.